Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I have to go put on my Yoda costume as soon as this is over. And the sad part is it fits.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, the real sad part is that it was a rubber mask. I thought we were going to get the full-on industrial lights and magic Disney team in there. Serious monster makeup. No, it was just a rubber mask on Tim Kirkjian. I thought the budget was bigger. I'm not going to lie. He gets to join us here on 95.7 The Game. What an ultimate booby prize. How could it get worse for Tim today? Well, Ray Ratto is going to greet him with all sorts of insults because of the Yoda stunt. Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us in the meantime. We really appreciate it, and may the force be with you, sir.
Well, thanks. It was more than the mask, though. I had to wear a robe and something under the robe, and there was a belt, and it was hard to put on because you have to put it on kind of backwards, and I had to go to the bathroom in the seventh inning, and there was nothing in the front, only in the back, so I couldn't go to the bathroom. That was an interesting night in Bristol, let's put it that way.
Well, let's start, first of all, with your poor decision to wear something underneath your robe.
Look, Ray, I just did what I was told. I showed up with a three-piece suit, and they said, no, well, you were going full costume for the whole game. So I did, and then when I put the mask on, I could barely breathe, I could barely see. But we somehow miraculously got through it. We had a pretty good laugh along the way, and that's okay once in a while to have a good chuckle. We're covering baseball for a living. This is not life or death.
Okay, never mind that, though. Why are all these good ideas never good enough for the executive producer to try on his own?
Well,
I mean, it's easy to just, you know, hire the help and go, here, look like an idiot for 3 hours and, you know, sweat like Indonesia in the monsoon season. But why aren't they ever doing this stuff?
Well, actually, the entire production crew, everyone in the truck or in the control room was dressed in some form of another. One guy had a lifesaver, but it wasn't the same as what I had to do. And poor Steve Levy, he had to wear the Darth Vader outfit for the entire time. This is the guy who does play-by-play on Monday Night Football, and he was dressed as Darth Vader for like 4 hours doing raps. So I think he had it way, way worse than I did. I only put the mask on when they came to me with something related to Star Wars, May the Force Be With You, whatever. The rest of the time I took it off because it was a little bit muffled with the mask on.
I got news for you. Levy wears that like on weekends when he's not working.
Well, if nothing, I hope you got a couple of free passes to Disney because you absolutely gave it the office. There is no doubt about that. Yoda Kirkjian joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Let's talk a little bit of baseball. And of all the bets that we could have made, I don't think anyone would have bet on the Giants being in first place at any point in time this year. And we certainly wouldn't have bet on Buster Posey returning with Mike Trout level on base plus slugging statistics backing him up. I don't know if a year off has ever done more for a player than it's doing for Posey right now, Tim.
Yeah, he looks really good. He looks like the Buster Posey, maybe not the batting champion MVP Buster Posey, but he looks awfully good. And maybe the year off, maybe the improved health is all he really needed. You know, he's got those great hands at the plate, and maybe he's got that swing back that was just so good. Aaron Boone was and I were at the batting cage years ago, and he said, "Just look at that move. Just look at that move that he does with his hands." And I can't even see exactly what he's talking about, but he says, "I can't do that. Most hitters can't do that." Maybe he's got that move back because he has really swung the bat well. As for the Giants, again, this is the beauty of baseball, that a team that should be a clear third-place team in that division against a team that I kept getting asked, are the Dodgers going to win 118 games this year? They're in first place, the Giants are. They've pitched exceptionally well. They've done most things exceptionally well.
Toward that end, since baseball is enjoying a renaissance of non-hitting, how much of that, in your opinion, is just because it's April? How much of it is the accumulated damage of three true outcomes baseball? And in either event, does that mean that a team like the Giants, who have largely, you know, league average pitching in terms of reputations, can a team like that get away with this for an entire season and look like they're really, really good at this?
I don't think so, Ray. Not for a full season. I think for 60 games, some teams faked their way through it last year. But the game, even in the three true outcomes, usually figures you out in 162. But I don't think there's any doubt with the way we play the game today. Let's just get it in the air, and we'll worry about everything else later. We're going to hit 232 as a league. We're going to have 1,092 more strikeouts than hits in the month of April, which never happened, of course. We've lost the value of the hit because everyone is just trying to hit it as far as they can. We no longer value a ground single to the right side because that doesn't do enough damage, and yet we're striking out a rate where 41 guys now have struck out four times or more in a game this season already, and it's May the 5th. This is the game we play, and this is one reason the Giants are doing so well, and this is why other teams aren't doing so well, but eventually this is going to figure itself out, and I think the best teams will be in the playoffs in October.
Tim, what's it going to take for us to have a pendulum swing back to a little bang-bang baseball? The three true outcomes is a bigger problem to me than time a game has ever been. There is less action in a major league game now than ever before. How does that change? Can it? Or are we too far down the mathematical road to come back from?
We are too far down now with the players that we have. I think it is too late for these guys who have been swinging a certain way for 10, if not 20 years, since they were 10 years old. This is the way they were taught to hit. And they can't change it now. Because to ask them to change it and go out and get a hit off of Jacob deGrom when you're going to change the way you've been swinging for the last 15 years, that's not going to work. The only way this is going to work, and it's a long-term fix, is we're going to have to start going to the batting cage with our 10-year-olds and our 12-year-olds and say, look, we're not going to worry so much about our exit velocity here and our launch angle. We're going to try to hit a ball hard someplace. We're going to try to hit it all over the field. We're going to make contact instead of trying to jack everything. And that's where I think it has to start, because I just think it's too late for a lot of our hitters who are overmatched as it is. Now you're going to ask them to make a change in their approach in the middle of a season. I just don't think that's going to work, especially when they're seeing the stuff that they are seeing every single night from virtually every pitcher.
I mean, do you think a little league manager even has the independent thought to tell a kid to choke up anymore?
I don't think so. I think we have a generation of players who have been taught this way, and it's not the player's fault. It is the game's fault. This is our young general managers. These are our new hitting coaches who are saying this is the way to go, and I've said it 1,000 times, this is not the way to go. The players are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than they've ever been. But the game isn't as good. It's a paradox. And I think we need to acknowledge that as many great players as we have who just overpower the game with their athletic gifts, we need to find a way to play the game better than we are right now, because that many more strikeouts than hits is not a healthy situation.
Okay, since they have to fix something other than the players, which of the nitwit rules they're going to run through the Atlantic League this summer do you think has the best chance of having any kind of effect if it was applied to the major leagues? Or is that just them sort of whistling in a graveyard?
I think it's the latter. I think they're whistling in the graveyard. Look, I'm sorry. I'm 64 years old, and moving the pitching rubber back a foot is a terrible idea. Now, it's a good idea in the minor leagues to see how it goes, but we're trying to protect our pitchers from getting hurt, and yet they all seem to get hurt every single day. And this is going to hurt them even more by moving the rubber back a foot. That's a bad idea. There are so many bad ideas in the minor leagues right now, but it's okay. It's a COVID-affected season. It's the minor leagues. This is where we're supposed to experiment with things and try to find something that's going to work. I don't think anything out there is going to really make the game better. I don't like the runner on second to start the 10th. I don't like seven-inning doubleheaders, but I love it now because we got to get through this season in one piece. And the only way to do that is to speed up the games a little bit. But you're right. The games are slow because we're averaging 19 strikeouts per game and everyone's trying to hit a home run.
Tim Kirkchen of ESPN, nice enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Meanwhile, the Oakland A's, the last time we talked to you, were having one of their worst starts to a season that they've ever had. Then they go on a darn near Miguel Tejada punctuating it winning streak. And then they start playing two steps forward, one step back baseball. Now they've got a three-game winning streak. Who do you think the Oakland A's can be or are this year so far?
Well, they've thoroughly confused me, as have many teams already this season, and we're barely a month in. I think they're the best team in the division. I thought that at the beginning of the year. I still believe that. And not because I think they're better than last year or the year before. I don't think they are. They lost too much, but they're better than the Astros. They're better than the Angels. They're better than anyone else in that division. So I don't know where they're going from here because it's hard to gauge. But, you know, Mark Canha has really made the leadoff spot a very productive spot. Jed Lowry from nowhere has become a productive player again. And the two Mats at the corners are great players. So
Jed Lowry's like the only guy hitting doubles in this league now.
He's got eight doubles already. It's amazing. And Bob Melvin's really, really good at this. So I'm staying with the A's. I think they're the best team in the division, and I think they'll win the West at the end.
Let's go to the AL Central then and give me your one-month analysis on Tony La Russa.
Well, it's a little early, obviously. We have to give him more than a month, but he just recently acknowledged that he wasn't completely aware of the extra inning rule and how that works. I find that impossible to believe because Tony's one of the smartest baseball men I've ever been around. He's taught me so much about the game. And I'm going to give him another month because I know there have been stories written about rumblings from the players that, you know, and some of the strategic moves, staying with Lucas Giolito too long and everything else. But I'm going to give him another month. And that team has had a million injuries. I don't think you blame that on the manager. And they haven't had their full team together basically all year. So I'm going to give him another month, see where they are. And no one's running away in that division. So I think we just need to be fair to Tony La Russa and give him a little more time, get his feet under him. He's been away for a long time.
Tim, I just want to follow up real fast. The reason why I bring it up is not because I want to pick on Tony La Russa, because he is, as you said, a very smart baseball guy. But the MO on Gabe Kapler coming here a year ago was that he was overmatched as a manager based on his 2 years in Philadelphia. Has he sort of redeemed himself with this start? Or are people still skeptical about him after a year and change?
Well, I think they're skeptical, but frankly, I think we're skeptical about almost all managers these days. Ray, you know this. The value of the manager isn't anywhere near what it used to be. He used to be in charge of the team. I mean, you imagine somebody telling Earl Weaver, here's a lineup you should play tonight? You imagine saying that to Dick Williams or even Roger Craig? That would never work.
I'd kill for that.
But that's where we are now. So we're not asking the manager to do all that much. I had a manager, a general manager, tell me, my manager is in charge of getting us, our players, ready to play the game. Just getting them ready. We'll take it from here, upstairs. We'll handle the rest. We'll handle the lineup. We'll handle when he should make a move. And that discourages me greatly. So it's no longer this great job that it used to be, and it's no longer a high-paying job. So I think we're skeptical about all managers almost, because they just don't have the control of the team that they used to, because the front office won't allow them that control.
Tim, in a bigger, broader question to wrap this up, and thank you so much for your time as always. If Major League Baseball was getting $130 million for expansion fees back in 1998, today they'd be looking at around $2.3, $2.4, maybe $2.5 billion just for an expansion team. Having said that, are we looking at expansion in the next decade for Major League Baseball?
Well, all the owners would love to expand to get a part of that $2.2 billion to get an expansion team. But I'm sorry, I just can't see it happening in the next 10 years. We probably have as many teams as we need right now anyway, and we have to solve the Rays and we have to solve the A's, new ballpark, new situation before we can go expand anywhere else. That's the way I've felt about
Amen.
It for about 10 years. And we're still not a whole lot closer on either one of those teams. So let's fix two really good franchises that need a new home and need a lot of help here before we start to give another city a major league team.
Tim Kirkchen here on 95.7 The Game, coming to us live from the Dagobah system. And we really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys. See you.